Hello, everybody. This is Rob Fredette for the podcast HodgePod, and I have a return guest on my podcast, Doug Carey, who was a previous guest a few episodes back on his book, The Berman Murders, Unraveling the Mojave Desert's Most Mysterious Unsolved Crime. He's been gracious enough to join me for this episode, and we're going to talk missing persons because this really, like, I don't know how people get missing, and it really bothers me at times, but it really is. Two cases we're going to look at tonight, Carly Lane Gousset and Bob Wildner. And we're going to talk about these cases. These folks are still missing. So, Doug, welcome back to my podcast. I'm really honored that you're back. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. Pleasure. Glad to be here.
So I looked up online before we got online on missing person cases. And from the National Crime Information Center, 521,705 people were reported missing in 2021, and 93,718 of those people remain missing at the start of 2022. How do people get missing, first of all? This is just an unbelievable stat.
I don't know, to be honest with you about that, Rob. It's not something I understand, nor is it something where I've done a real deep dive into looking at the bigger picture. I know that there are some big picture causes. For example, trafficking is one. Voluntary disappearances is another. Obviously, crime abduction is another. I think when you're talking about, for example, Carly Gousset, teenagers, often when they go missing, it's runaway. That's the most common cause. Abduction is every parent's biggest fear, of course, but that's much less common. But there are myriad causes, and especially with women, it's quite tragic. Kids will run away and then end up getting pulled into trafficking or into the drug world, whatever it might be. So there are a lot of reasons why people go missing, but I can't claim to be a big picture expert.
I got you. Thank you very much. It's just weird. There was a case in Hillsboro, Oregon. It must have been this week. There was a woman who was abducted, and a Ring camera caught it, and she went to a house where she didn't know this person. Some coward just grabs her and brings her into her car. Well, it so happens she was rescued, and the coward got arrested. So it's good that we have cameras that can check this stuff, because she could have been a missing person. I don't know the woman's name, but it was on social media. It's quite frightening. So, Carly.
Well, cameras are a big tool. And although they raise privacy concerns, and certainly that's something I understand. I mean, again, don't hold it against me, but you know, I'm a lawyer by background. As a lawyer, you become educated in the underpinnings of privacy rights in the United States and why that's so important and why it's such an important part of the American character. At the same time, crime prevention and crime investigation is also very important. So you have these competing values, but there's no doubt that surveillance cameras have made a huge difference in solving all kinds of crimes, and in particular, missing person cases.
So Carly Gousset went missing on October 13th, 2018. So she's been missing over 6.5 years.
Oh, this one, I got to tell you, Rob, this one haunts me. Most of the cases I work on, they affect me emotionally, but they don't necessarily haunt me. This one haunts me because of the uncertainty and because of her youth and because of where it occurred. It's the most uncanny, unlikely, and disturbing situation of a missing person that I have encountered.
It's on the FBI's missing persons website, and there's a $5,000 reward to be given to the FBI to find out the whereabouts of Carly Lane Gousset, and they have some links showing her family how much they miss her, and they're absolutely heartbreaking. I watched them, and they're just horrible, and I can imagine it's a daily horror show for the family.
it's been very hard on the family. I did a deep dive on this case, and to date, I've written 3 articles about it. And you know my immersive style. I like to get in and really understand a story and do original research. So when I got involved in the case, I was able to make arrangement a couple of weeks after Carly disappeared to go into the house, to sit down with the parents, to do a tape recorded interview, to meet her little brothers, to go into her room and to really understand the scene, what happened. And then I walked from there down to the road where she was last seen, spent a lot of time in that area. And I've been back there several times. I've met with the family. There was a tape recording that Melissa had done of her stepmother, Melissa Gousset, had done of Carly the night before Carly disappeared. I was able to hear that long before it was released to the public. So I'm very familiar with the case. I've done a deep dive on it. And I'm just as puzzled as anybody. I just don't have any answers except to say that my best guess or supposition would be that she was abducted. As unlikely as that is, given the location and given the statistics, Rob, I still think that's probably what happened.
So she was at a party that night? Was she at a party? And after the party, she just disappeared?
Okay, so Carly was a 16-year-old girl. She'd had some issues with marijuana use and a little bit of, I don't know if I'd call it delinquency, but just some issues at school. She had a boyfriend. She had a friend group. In some ways, she's just a typical teenager who's maybe a little bit rambunctious, acting out a little, but at the same time, fundamentally a good girl, good relationship with her father, good relationship with her birth mother, her stepmother. There was nothing that indicated any problem. She loved her little brother. She loved her boyfriend. So Friday night, she tells her mom she's going to stay in town. Let me back up for a second, Rob. Town is about 10 miles away. So we're talking an area of Eastern California that's quite rural. Bishop, California itself, where Carly went to high school, is a rather, remote location. I mean, it's a city, and it has all the services that one would expect, but it's more like Whitefish, Montana, something like that. It's a mountain city. Mm-hmm. Tourists pass through, a fairly active kind of place. But where Carly lived was on a lonely highway, Highway 6. It's actually an interstate little road that runs north from Bishop into a lonely area of eastern Mono County called Chalfont Valley, really just a place of mountains and wide open spaces. And in that valley was this little subdivision, and that's where Carly's parents lived, mainly modular homes and kind of rural homes with large lots, very comfortable subdivision where neighbors know each other, but small, a little pocket of homes in what's otherwise pretty much wide open desert. So back to the events. Friday night, Carly is down in town, so she's 10 miles away. She calls her stepmom, Melissa. She was living at that time with her stepmom and her birth dad. Her birth mom lived up in Nevada. So Melissa, her stepmom, and Carly are close. I'm going to go to a football game. I'll be home late. Well, really what she was doing is going to a house party with her boyfriend and some other kids. And they were using drugs. It appears from the investigation that the only drug that was used was marijuana. Now, I have to tell you, based on my initial reports of what I heard from the birth mom, from Melissa, and what Carly herself had said, it sounded to me like an acid trip. I mean, listen, I was at Berkeley in the 70s. I know what that stuff is about. Mm-hmm. Sounded to me like she took some acid. And the reason I thought that she might have taken LSD was that she had actually asked her birth mom a couple of months earlier what she thought of LSD, and her birth mom gave her some honest feedback. Additionally, it was known that there was some LSD going around Bishop at the time. Nonetheless, the police did do a deep dive on this, and I believe the FBI did too. And it appears that all she did was smoke weed. She'd smoked weed before, and so why she would have a bad reaction is strange. But she became very paranoid, and she ended up like freaking out and running away from the house party, terrified, called her mom on the phone and said she was scared. Could her stepmom Melissa come get her. So Melissa jumps in the car, rushes the 10 miles down to town, finds Carly running down the street a little ways from the house party, gets her into the back of the car, asks her, oh my gosh, what's going on? Carly talks about how she was freaking out and she's just scared. So Melissa brings her home and they have a long night in the house, as primarily Melissa, her father, Zach, was somewhat involved, but it was mainly Melissa just trying to talk Carly down, calm her down, get her to sleep. Carly would sort of go up and down. She had these episodes. Sometimes she'd be very manic and almost hallucinating. And other times she would be just more normal. But by the wee hours, she had apparently fallen asleep.
Mm. So what's the feeling? Was she, did anybody like notice that at the party that she was gone, or was there any sense that she was missing?
Well, at the party, yeah, her boyfriend knew that she had run off, but you know, once her mom came and got her, it seemed mm-hmm. everything was okay. She's home in her room. Her mom is there. They're kind of going through these ups and downs. The reason her mom tape recorded part of it was that she wanted to use it as a teaching moment. Her idea was, in the morning when she's feeling better, play her the tape and say, listen to this crazy stuff you're saying. Doesn't make sense to do drugs, honey. This is an example of what happens. You kind of get wigged out. Obviously, Melissa never had that chance, because early in the morning, Melissa wakes up and she's in the room with Carly. Just they're crashed out on the bed together. She wakes up and Carly's gone. She goes to look for Carly. Her phone is sitting on a counter in the kitchen and she's gone. Melissa jumps in her car and goes and looks for her, and Carly just can't be found. And the situation sort of escalates from there. Now, listen, a lot of people immediately started pointing fingers at the stepmom. First of all, you know, stepmom, there's a certain implication of that. But more importantly, Melissa began live streaming onto Facebook during the course of the Saturday when the search begins to escalate for Carly. And honestly, those videos, I think most of which have been taken down, were pretty weird. If you see Melissa, she looks weird. And naturally, people are going, what's wrong with this lady? Something seems off. And so based on Melissa's demeanor, they immediately suspected her. But the thing is, you can't tell just by a person's demeanor what they're thinking or what's really going on. A lot of people think they can read other people, but in situations like that, it's really hard to tell. Maybe she was feeling guilty and somehow responsible. Maybe she just isn't good on camera. So can you look at it as a factor? Odd demeanor? Yes. But to pronounce judgment based on demeanor isn't a good practice. And the reason that I was fairly quickly able to conclude that nothing bad happened in the house that night, and indeed Carly did leave the house healthy and unscathed on Saturday morning, was that I talked with two neighbors independently who saw her, and both described the same thing, saw her walking through the neighborhood early in the morning, wearing sweatpants and a t-shirt. And oddly, she was carrying a piece of paper in her hand. She was last spotted by a witness that the sheriff's office has identified, but whose name has never been publicly revealed, who saw her standing down by the highway, this U.S. Highway 6, a little two-lane road, literally, you know, in the middle of nowhere. And whether she voluntarily got into a vehicle, whether someone forced her into a vehicle, or whether she just kept walking into the desert so far into some place where she hid in a hidey hole and no one ever found her, is anyone's guess. I mean, it's one of those, because it's been over 5 years and she hasn't surfaced.
There is a, like I said earlier, there is a reward of $5,000 from the FBI. You can go on the FBI website, Carly Lane Gousset, and you can get the description. She's 5'7", dark blonde, female, and blue eyes, approximately 110 pounds at the time of disappearance. And it's really heartbreaking, just the videos about this. It's just horrible. There's a case here in East Tennessee, I think I spoke the last time. Her young girl's name is Summer Wells. It'll be approaching 3 years in June. She's been missing. She was, looks like, supposedly snatched from her home, and there's still no no way of knowing where she is. It's just horrible. It's just people go missing. It's absolutely stunning.
Well, I do not believe Carly was a runaway. And I don't think a healthy girl on a day that wasn't particularly hot, it was a fairly temperate day, would have gotten heat exhaustion or something like that. I really doubt she just crawled off somewhere to die. She had a life. She had a boyfriend. She had a friend group. She had a stepmom and a dad. She had little brothers whom she loved. So I think abduction is most likely. And honestly, she was a beautiful girl. She was slender, with long hair, blue eye, or green eyes. She had that look that I think might attract a creeper, so that if somebody did happen to come down the road and they saw her, she might be the kind of bait that they would try to snatch. Terrible, terrible thing. We have to conclude at this point that she's probably no longer alive, although we don't know for sure. But it's so mysterious and so troubling. Imagine if that was your daughter and she's just gone.
It's absolutely horrible. Another case in Death Valley is that one of Bob Wilner, 76-year-old. He was out at the Death Valley National Park in May of 2021, and he has not been seen since, and he knew that area like the back of his hand, did he not?
Well, his family would like to believe that he knew it like the back of his hand. My investigation would end in the community of people who go to the hot springs in this part of Death Valley National Park called Saline Valley, where by chance the Burmans disappeared and turned up murdered. In Bob's case, he was, like I said, well known. He frequented the area. And on a prior trip, a truck that he was driving had broken down. And so he was going back. To fix the truck. He was a guy who knew his way around automobiles. He was going to go fix the truck and then drive back out and then later return with a friend to shuttle the truck back out of Saline Valley. So he was on a mission. Bob was starting to experience a little bit of cognitive decline, a little bit of short-term memory loss, that kind of thing. He would get a little fuzzy. He'd had a long day on the road, driven a long way and come in on this rough dirt road, arriving after dark. He'd popped a couple of beers along the way. He usually did. Once he got off the highway, he was on the dirt road. He liked to have a couple of beers while he's driving. People commonly do that out there. He rolled in after dark, and in the morning, the truck that he had just driven in was found, but he was nowhere to be seen. And a massive search failed to turn up anything. And the question was, well, how far could he have gotten? The guy was 76 years old. He had limited mobility at that point. He was pretty frail, kind of hunched over. Man, it's not like he would have walked for miles. He had parked near an outhouse. This is a good quality outhouse, kind of looks like a permanent structure built by the National Park Service. And it was pretty obvious to me that what happened is as he pulled into the campground, his headlights kind of, as he made a turn, swept across the face of this outhouse, and he probably had to use the facilities, right? He'd had a couple of beers, maybe had to take a leak, maybe, who knows? But it's very, very plausible to think that's why he happened to stop his truck in that location. The truck was found with a fast food bag on the seat, a couple of beer cans on the floor, the keys still in the ignition, and his cell phone also sitting on the seat. Well, the question is, where did he go? Well, I think most likely he went to use the bathroom. Well, why didn't he, after he was using the bathroom, just walk back to his truck? Well, this is where Bob may not have known the area as well as he thought he did. The campground that he was in is a big kind of sprawling campground. And Bob usually camped in a different location. He had come around back to that side because that's where his broken truck was. It had been put over there. So he comes out of the bathroom. He doesn't have a flashlight. I know this because I searched his truck and found the flashlight in the glove box, and it didn't even have a bulb. He didn't have his cell phone light because he left it on the seat. So he came out. There was no moon that night. The truck he was driving was black. Mm. And as he looked around, he probably was just disoriented. And what my colleague and I, who investigated this, theorized is that simple mistake. he came out and instead of turning right and going a few hundred feet kind of down a little hill to where his truck was, he probably turned left and went down a little hill in the wrong direction. That's what we think happened.
You said there was a massive search. How long was the search? How long did the search
take? Well, the search, because of the heat, it got very hot in the days after he disappeared. Even in May, it can get quite hot out there, and it was unsafe for the search to continue. But they did cover a big area. And again, this is wide open desert, so a little hard for somebody to hide. So what happened to Bob? He vanished off the face of the earth. And how come they couldn't see him from the air, or the ground searchers didn't stumble across him? I mean, my God, how far could he have gotten? So they did pump the outhouse just in case somehow he fell in or, you know, something crazy like that. As my colleague and I looked at it, we thought there must be some explanation. Nobody kidnaps a 76-year-old man in the middle of the night in an area where there's hardly anybody to begin with. So what we did is we did a reconstruction. Happened to be a moonless night when we did it. Well, first, we spent days scouring the area and didn't turn up any clues. Mm. So then we did a reconstruction. My colleague was the one who conceived of this. He wore the same kind of shoes Bob was wearing. We did it on a moonless night. He kind of kept his, you know, his head down, walked a little bit hunched. And we started with the premise that Bob came out of the bathroom and turned the wrong way. And what we concluded was that Bob would have gotten only so far before he would have realized his mistake. Because if you look around and you look at the outline of the mountains against the sky, you would realize, wait a minute. I went the wrong way. I need to go back the other way. But as you go back the other way, there was a path that would, even at night, would be kind of obvious. It was kind of whitish in color against the dark soil. And if you started following that path, yes, you'd be heading back in the direction of the outhouse, but not quite. You'd actually go up the wrong hill, and you'd end up on a plateau just 100 vertical feet above the outhouse, and you would bypass the camp entirely and head off in a direction that you're now moving away from the camp. And it was in that spot, probably less than a quarter of a mile from the camp, but far enough away that somebody wouldn't hear you crying out. It was in that spot that we found one of Bob's broken sandals, which was positively identified by his wife, Cindy Lee, because not only did she recognize the brand and the look of it, it had some very unusual adhesive tape patchwork in the heel area. And Cindy remembered it. She said, yeah, you know, Bob, he was kind of like to prolong the life of things. And when these favorite old sandals of his a few days before the trip, he could see where they were separating a little bit. He very carefully and painstakingly took adhesive tape and patched it. And I watched him do it, she told me. And so she knew positively that that was his sandal. Well, we looked at the sandal and the manner in which it had broken. And it was pretty obvious to me that what had happened is he most likely stepped on a rock, and his foot, because you couldn't see it at night as you're shuffling along, his foot probably slipped off hard to one side. The sandal broke. Most likely he toppled over, and he may well have injured himself, might have broken a hip, broken a leg or something. Come morning, if he was still in that spot, he could have seen the tops of the palm trees of the campground where he needed to be, but he could have yelled at the top of his lungs and never been heard. So if he had lost his mobility, he would not be able to make it back to camp if he, for example, had a broken hip. However, if he crawled just a short distance, kind of down a little hill in the direction of camp, guess what? There are some caves there, and these caves are highly unstable. I've never seen conditions like this, geologic conditions like this. Wow. When we went out there, it was obvious that there had been some recent collapses of these caves. And indeed, a couple of months after Bob disappeared, there were heavy, heavy rainstorms, which could have caused a cave to collapse. So, Rob, imagine this. What happened to Bob Wilderner? I think what happened is he got disoriented. He went the wrong way. He took a hard fall. He injured himself. Come morning, he was either trying to get back to camp or just trying to get out of the sun, found his way into one of these caves. He perished. That would explain why a firefighter smelled the strong smell of death a few weeks later, but because of the shifting winds, wasn't able to identify where the smell was coming from, but said to his wife, "I think that's Bob." He actually said that to his wife. That would account for the strong smell. But why is Bob gone? Why can't you find a trace of him? Because if he went into one of these caves, there were collapses. And if he happened to be in a cave that, and he perished in there, and then a couple of months later, there's heavy rains and the cave collapses, that would explain how his remains would get swallowed up. It's the only logical explanation that fits with the known facts.
How long did it take you to surmise that what had happened? Because that is just, that's unbelievable.
Well, I did a workup ahead of time. I went and met with Bob's wife, Cindy Lee. I met with Bob's best friend, who had been to Saline Valley with him many times. I met with members of Bob's family who had been involved in the initial search. I spoke with search and rescue folks, looked at their maps. And of course, I know the area very, very well. However, I didn't know about this particular section of Little Hills. They're very nondescript, Rob. You can be up close to them and not realize there's even caves there. So it was quite interesting to stumble across this scene. So when my colleague Stuart Jeffries and I went out there, we spent a few days just scouring the desert. And at one point, I found myself a couple of miles away from camp, way up on this alluvial fan, looking down at the hot springs and thinking, asking myself, Doug, what are you doing up here? Like, this guy would have never made it up here. Like, there has to be some other explanation. And it was the sandal that led us in the direction of these caves. And I thought, yeah, he probably got swallowed. And Rob, it's not the first time that somebody has been swallowed. I know of other cases where disappearances are explained by, for example, a vehicle driving off a bridge into water, things like that. And you think, oh my gosh, they've been abducted, and people spin these theories. No, they got swallowed. And I think Bob Wildner got swallowed.
Is it possible, like in like the desert out there, is it possible to get disoriented even if you're at full capacity? I mean, if you don't have a phone or if you don't, I mean, you look around, can you get disoriented even in the best of conditions?
Unbelievable, especially at night. One night I had walked from our campsite. This is when my colleague and I were out there, and I had walked from our campsite to just go use the facility, little outhouse, and in a different area of the same general campground. And as I was walking back, I lost track of where our little campsite was because of the bushes, and just it was dark, and I couldn't figure it out. I had a flashlight, and I very quickly figured it out. But yeah, it's so easy to get disoriented in the desert at night. I don't care who you are. I don't care how many times you've been out there, how well you know it. You can get disoriented quite quickly. And even if you can tell by the position of the stars and the outline of the mountain ridge lines, generally where you are, finding your way to a specific spot can be a little bit like a needle in the haystack. It's a big desert. And if you get off track and you miss your truck, I mean, you might walk right by it 100 feet away and not even know it's there. And I think that's what happened to Bob. And what you should do in that situation, Rob, is just call it. Just say, you know what? I'm lost. I got to wait for daybreak. This will be a good lesson in my life. And you sit down and you just wait for the light to come. That's what he should have done. Just said, you know what? I've been here, coming here for decades, and I just got lost in a place that I should know. This is embarrassing. I'll have a story to tell, and just sit down and wait. But when you try to solve a problem like that at night, no flashlight, you're now in unfamiliar terrain, bad things can happen, and I think that's what happened.
That is an unbelievable way to figure out what happened to Bob Wildner. Now, do cell phones work out in the desert? Hopefully I'm not asking a dumb question because it's way out there. Do cell phones have, capability to work?
Rob, that's not a dumb question. It's an excellent question. And in certain parts of the wilderness, yes, cell phones work well. For example, the western side of Saline Valley, the southwestern side, is defined by a very, very tall mountain range with peaks reaching up to 11,000 feet. If Whoa. You're up on those peaks, you can look way down into these little towns in the valley, and you can get signal up there sometimes. But if you're over on the Saline Valley side, ringed by tall mountains, I've heard a story that there's one little spot where you can sometimes get a signal. But no, generally cell phones do not work out there.
So, I live here in Memphis, and we have, you know, in cities you have cell phone service, but it doesn't matter. We drive during certain patches. Our cell phones don't work. Doesn't matter what time of day it is. We'll drive through this one area. Our cell phone won't work. And then we'll drive by and our satellite radio will dip out in this one section, you know, a few areas around here. And it's like, how can it do that? I mean, it's just weird how things like dip out. But that is an unbelievable determination of what you think happened to Bob Wilner. That was just an unbelievable story there. So what did the law enforcement think? Were you able to give your deduction to the law enforcement?
Well, they didn't really do much with it. I think they, first of all, listen, in fairness, Inyo County is a rural county with limited budget and limited resources. And to try to get a team out into the field to follow up on this lead was difficult. Supposedly they went out there, but you would need some tools and some time to really do the investigation that would be necessary to follow up on this lead. It did, however, bring some comfort to the family because they felt like, okay, now we know he was there for sure. And probably he wasn't kidnapped. Although it's not a firm answer to the question. And I do have in the back of my mind, I'd love to get out there again and do some more looking around and see if we can find some remains or some actual evidence of Bob besides the one sandal. I think we have enough to have a pretty good theory. And one thing Cindy Lee told me was that, you know, maybe it's meant to be because Bob loved those hot springs. That was the place that he loved more than anywhere. Maybe it's fitting that he's entombed out there in a place that he loves so much.
Are you working on any other cases that you're investigating? I know we've talked about these two. Is there anything out there that you're investigating now that you can discuss?
Yeah, I'm deep into the Naomi Arion case. This is not a mystery. Well, it is a mystery, but it's a different kind of mystery. This was a very high profile case here in Nevada, Northern Nevada. Naomi Arion, 18-year-old girl, was sitting in a Walmart parking lot about 5:30 in the morning. It was March, so it was still dark outside. She was just sitting in her car waiting to go to work. There is a Tesla battery factory in the Reno area, and she was going to catch a shuttle bus that would take her to this factory. And it was common for her to just park in the Walmart parking lot and then get on the shuttle bus. And she was texting friends. Well, a 41-year-old construction supervisor, a guy who had a six-figure job, drove a $60,000 truck, he had a girlfriend, he forced his way into the car, drove her way out into the Nevada desert, raped her, dumped her, shot her in the back of the head, and dumped her body into a pre-dug grave. Jeez. And then went home to his girlfriend, "Honey, I'm home." And the question is, what happened? Why did this happen? So what I'm investigating, first of all, the story is an interesting story because Naomi was an extraordinary person. And I'm happy her family's supporting my project and
awesome.
Cooperating with me.
That's
because
awesome.
I really want to tell her story of what this artistic, wonderful young woman was about. The man she encountered was a very dark soul who had served time as a teenager for some bad crimes, but seemed to be rehabilitated. And so what I've been doing is a deep dive into his past, into his personality, and into the things that might be underpinnings of this horrific crime to try to understand what happened. I won't be able to answer those questions with any kind of definitive answer. It's not like a forensic investigation where you have a yes and a no kind of answer. Trying to understand the psychology of a killer is different. But I do think there are some things that should be brought to light to try to gain a fuller understanding of the situation and what happened to Naomi. The other thing I want to bring out is the extraordinary work that was done by the rural law enforcement agencies to come together in this moment of crisis to find this young girl. Ultimately, what they found was, unfortunately, her body, but they cracked the case very quickly, and there was a measure of victory in how they approached it, and it's a good story. So that's what I'm really deep in right now, is working on that story. Yeah.
That's very bothersome. She was just waiting to go to work, and some creep, some idiot, does that to her. That is just infuriating. What is wrong with people? My goodness. My goodness.
I don't know the answer to that. I'm starting to think maybe this was a sociopath's answer to a midlife crisis.
Jeez. Man, oh, man. I just want to thank Doug Carey for coming on my podcast again. He's the author of The Berman Murders, Unraveling the Mojave Desert's Most Mysterious Unsolved Crime. He was on talking about some missing person cases and just another case just a few moments ago, which was horrible. But, Doug, I want to thank you very much for coming on. I'm honored that you will come on my podcast. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Thanks for having me.